You're listening to Catch the Current, the coolest seafood podcast out there from the team at Undercurrent News, your trusted source for seafood prices, news, and data. I'm Amanda Buckle.
And I'm Lauren Castiglione. New week, new lawsuit against the Trump administration. This week, Mark Foods and Bristol Seafood joined the list of U.S. seafood companies that have filed lawsuits against the administration of U.S. President Donald Trump in an attempt to stop his tariffs and recoup their related expenses.
Mark Foods, if you're unfamiliar, is a large New York City-based importer and wholesaler. On December 3rd, the company filed an 11-page complaint in the U.S. Court of International Trade that names U.S. Customs and Border Protection and CBP Commissioner Rodney Scott as defendants.
Bristol Seafood, a Portland, Maine-based company acquired by Mark Foods in August, filed its own 11-page lawsuit on December 5th in the same court against the same defendants, containing identical language. As we previously reported, San Diego, California-based tuna giant Bumblebee, which is owned by Taiwan's FCF company, and Neptuno's USA, a large seafood importer based in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and roughly 100 other businesses have already filed suit over the tariffs. And like the similar cases brought against the Trump administration, the lawsuits filed by Mark Foods and Bristol Seafood argue the president acted unlawfully in using the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, or the IEEPA, as his authority to impose broad tariffs without congressional involvement or any subsequent regulatory process. The Mark Foods and Bristol Seafood complaints are banking on the U.S. Supreme Court ruling that Trump's tariffs implemented under the IEEPA are unconstitutional in response to two separate lawsuits.
It's not clear when this ruling is coming. Some expect a Supreme Court ruling by the end of this month, maybe even before the end of the week, which completely disrupted our plans to run our 2026 look at episode this week, because who wants to do all that work and then have it upended by this ruling? So
hasn't that been the theme for us the entire year?
That has been. And I don't want to end it on that note, Lauren. I don't want to end it on that. Yeah.
Neither do I.
Nope. So Undercurrents, Jason Huffman even reports that there is also a possibility that it could take the court until as late as June 2026 to make a decision. So as always, the place to stay tuned for updates on all of this is undercurrentnews.com. Full story on the latest lawsuit can be found in the show notes.
Meanwhile, the other big tariff-related headline is that the National Fisheries Institute, also known as NFI, the U.S. seafood industry's largest and most influential trade group, took its best shot last week at convincing the U.S. President Donald Trump administration to maintain zero tariffs on seafood imported from Canada and Mexico. Morgan Bell, NFI's Director of Public Policy, testified before the Office of the United States Trade Representative on Friday, December 5th, the third day of hearings related to the U.S.-Mexico-Canada Agreement, or USMCA, stating that seafood trade between the three nations has thrived under the deal, benefiting U.S. seafood suppliers, their employees, and millions of American consumers. Bell was among a handful of U.S. seafood industry representatives to testify at the hearing held at the International Trade Commission. In total, nearly 150 speakers from a range of industries, including agriculture, manufacturing, tourism, and energy, weighed in on the USMCA, with many depicting the agreement as essential to the success of their businesses.
Trump signed the USMCA, which has an expiration date of 2036, in 2020. Under the agreement, seafood trade between the three countries has no tariffs. That means that when Trump initiated a global trade war with China, Canadian seafood commodities such as lobster, snow crab, and salmon continued to the U.S. without additional fees, while seafood from other countries came with tariffs ranging from 19% to 50%. And of course, this is huge considering that Canada is the U.S.'s largest source of seafood, sending it 275,895 metric tons, worth $3.9 billion in 2024.
U.S. importers of seafood from Mexico have also benefited, tallying 72,438 tons, worth $603.6 million in 2024, including tuna, representing 20,429 tons, worth $153 million last year, and shrimp with 13,867 tons, worth $149.5 million. Combined, Canada and Mexico sent us about 248,333 tons of seafood, worth $4.5 billion in 2024. But that doesn't count the 208,829 tons of seafood worth $1.5 billion that the U.S. exports to Canada and Mexico, making the whole relationship worth about $6 billion. The full story from UCN reporter Barb Dean Simmons, which features can't-miss UCN trade portal charts, can be found in the show notes.
And we'll be quizzing you on all those numbers at the end of the podcast, so I hope you took notes. Now,
I hope that wasn't meant for me.
You're like, oh no. Staying with Canadian news, a lobster processing plant in the province of Nova Scotia with ties to Heartland Foods is reported to be a total loss following a fire this past Monday. During its peak season, the plant employs up to 100 people sourcing lobsters both locally and from the U.S. state of Maine. About 30 employees were said to be working at the plant located in the community of Wallace when the fire broke out at around 11 a.m. on Monday.
The plant had been acquired by Aquashell Holdings in 1999. Aquashell is a subsidiary of the Harlan Companies, a conglomerate based in the U.S. state of Indiana. You may recall that Aquashell recently acquired the assets of lobster processor Cozy Harbor Seafood and its affiliates, Casco Bay Lobster and Arts Lobster, out of Chapter 11 bankruptcy. The company was planning to diversify its processing to the U.S. with the Cozy Harbor purchase.
And believe it or not, that was not the only devastating fire to strike the seafood industry. A fast-moving fire tore through the Icelandic Iberica-owned Archner shrimp plant in Puerto Madryn in Argentina late last Friday night. The blaze began in the offloading area shortly after 10 p.m. and spread rapidly within minutes, prompting a response from multiple fire crews as parts of the structure collapsed. Workers escaped through smoke and small explosions, leaving belongings behind as changing rooms and support areas burned.
Fortunately, no one was injured, but many of the plant's daily use infrastructure, including offloading, washing, the fresh chamber, dining area, and locker rooms, were lost. Newly installed machinery for a peeled and deveined shrimp line was also damaged. The company's general manager did say, though, that while the damage was significant, it was not structural, and it did not impact the company's freezing, processing, or packaging areas. The cause of the fire is still under investigation, with an electrical fault considered as a possible origin. Archner plans to rebuild throughout the remainder of December and aims to resume production in approximately a month to avoid missing the provincial shrimp season.
In other news, Dungeness crab harvesters in the U.S. state of Oregon have something to celebrate this holiday season, a partial opening of the commercial Dungeness crab fishery. Per the announcement, the season will be open from Cape Falcon to the California border, including the southern part of the state's coast. However, the state's north coast will remain closed for the time being, with the earliest the area could open, pending the meat yield, being December 31st. You may recall that Oregon's Department of Fish and Wildlife delayed the season opener in an announcement made on November 21st after crab in Long Beach, Washington, failed to meet the meat fill requirement. While the crab met both meat and safe biotoxin level requirements, Oregon's Department of Fish and Wildlife said that most advisory committee members supported a delay as it would be the least disruptive to traditional fishing patterns and may improve market conditions. Oregon's north coast will remain aligned with Washington, the state on its northern border, and the area will only open once the crab meets the 23% meat fill criteria.
Meanwhile, the season is also opening under a fleet advisory due to whale entanglements. There have been four confirmed humpback whale entanglements attributed to the Oregon commercial crab fishery in 2025. ODFW said in a notice published on December 5th that given the entanglement events and the high number of crab lines in the water during the first months of the season, it is issuing a fleet advisory for the commercial Dungeness crab fishery in all waters off Oregon. The Oregon's fleet's whale-related advisory is in effect upon the start of the 2025-2026 season on December 16th and remains in effect through the end of February or until suspended. The agency said that it will also be strongly considering taking additional regulatory action this season to further reduce whale entanglement risks.
The issue with entanglements is something that has also made headlines with East Coast fisheries this week. On December 3rd, an entangled North Atlantic right whale was spotted off Jekyll Island, Georgia, by an aerial survey team from the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission. The whale, identified as a juvenile male born in 2022, was last seen gear-free in July in the Gulf of St. Lawrence, Canada. According to NOAA, it's a very complex entanglement, with the whale having several lines wrapped around his head and mouth, including one cutting into his blowhole. They say that the line also trails beyond the flukes. So biologists with no fisheries have made a preliminary determination that the juvenile whale's entanglement meets the unusual mortality event criteria as a serious injury case, which means that the whale is likely to die as a result of this entanglement. And multiple attempts to remove the gear were made by trained responders. And while they were unable to remove all the gear, they were able to attach a buoy to the remaining gear to track the whale. And I do want to say that it's like the 168th whale to be documented as part of this UME, as part of this unusual mortality event. And that's been going on since 2017, which is, I think, Lauren, when you and I like started the industry, and you and I used to joke that we're going to start like rightwhalenews.com.
Yes.
Because we were really reporting on it so much, because at the time it was like in like the double digits that these whale deaths were happening. And this year, although this, you know, we have this one document right now, this is actually only the second documented UME for North Atlantic right whales this year. So, you know, we did have an entanglement last year, a death that was attributed to the Maine lobster fishery, which was a big blow. But, you know, action is being taken. We're watching where these things are going. So, you know, this is sad that this is happening, and it's going to be interesting to see if they are able to remove the gear and where the gear is from. You know, the efforts, like, again, to go from double digits to where we are now, where it's only two, you know, hopefully we're down to zero one day, but.
Exactly. So moving along to markets, and we're going to be taking a look at salmon this week. So after several weeks of softness, the Chilean market finally bounced back in a meaningful way. Fresh fillet prices rebounded pretty sharply. We saw gains of more than 50 cents across the main D-trim categories. That shift was driven by a combination of lighter early week production, thanks in part to a national holiday on Monday, and stronger global pull, especially from Brazil. As a result, U.S. buyers are reporting fewer deep discounts and more resistance from packers who suddenly have better returns elsewhere. Whole fish into the U.S. also firmed a touch, with 12 to 14s and 14 to 16s each adding about 5 cents on lighter harvesting and higher replacement costs. Air freight capacity getting squeezed by Chile's fruit season continues to play a role here. On the frozen side was a little bit of a different story. It seems like there's some inventory that sellers are trying to clear out before the end of the year. So frozen fillet pricing remained about steady, while some larger 8 ounce sized skinless portions slipped about 20 cents. Over to Norway. Norway continues to climb. Spot prices in Norway are edging higher, especially for larger size fillets. And the UCN Oslo index was up this week as well. Those increases are flowing straight into the US. So fresh Norwegian fillets moved higher again, a major 70 cent jump across the 2 to 3, 3 to 4, and 4 to 5 pound sizes, taking the US averages into the high sevens. Whole fish into the US followed that same trajectory, with 6 to 7 and 7 to 8 kilogram fish up around 60 cents. So we're seeing that global firmness reflected in China too. Chinese wholesale markets posted increases for Norwegian salmon, which reinforces the idea that the international demand is strong and supply is tight. So overall, the US Norwegian market feels firm, but it's a bit unsettled. Demand is seasonally solid. It's not spectacular, but higher raw material costs, stricter growth expectations under Norway's traffic light system, and strong buying interest from Europe and Asia are giving US buyers limited negotiating room.
Thanks, Lauren. And now on to just a couple of fun stories this week. But this one makes me angry, Lauren, because I feel like I'm missing out, okay?
Oh, okay. Okay, let's hear it.
McDonald's in the UK, I mean, they just got rid of it, but they had a fish finger Happy Meal. How come we can't have that? How come we can't have nice things?
I know, right? Like, I would love to get my kids fingerfish, would you say?
A fingerfish. Fish finger Happy Meal.
A fish finger Happy Meal.
Right? Like, I would love that. I can't get them. I could probably get them a McFish, but they want a toy. And I don't know if that's an addition.
Of course.
So anyway, what a great way to introduce kids to fish, to keep them eating it. So they discontinued it at McDonald's, but then they added a McFish kids Happy Meal. And this is all in the UK. So we got to hop on a plane, take the kids over there for a McDonald's trip. So
perhaps it's the test market and they'll be rolling it out here in no time.
I hope so. I thought that was a cool find. And then my second crazy story this week has been living in the back of my head. Okay. A drone was stopped carrying crab legs along with them, along with some steak in Tinbold Bay and the illicit meal. It was it had a couple other things that were illegal in it. I'm not going to name it on the podcast, but this illicit meal was headed. It was headed to a correctional institution, a prison in South Carolina. So someone was trying to send a prison inmate some crab legs and some Old Bay to go with it, because you got to have those crab legs seasoned.
Amanda, would you try and sneak in requests like that for me?
For you? What are you going to be in jail for, Lauren?
There could be so many things.
Well, anyway, I just thought it was so funny. Just like, I imagine just like stopping this drone and you're like, okay, what could be inside? And then, so you find the drugs. You're like, not, you know, you're like, okay, I expected that one. But then you pull out the Old Bay. You're like, okay, this is new. And then the crab legs, and you're like, I've seen it all.
That's a good friend right there, though.
I've seen it all. All right. Well, that is our final story for this week. But one last thing before we go. Next week, Friday, December 19th, will be our final episode for the year, and it is one you won't want to miss. The whole Undercurrent Price reporting team will be joining us, plus some of our other reporter friends, as we look ahead to 2026.
But do not fret, we will be back in the new year. Your favorite seafood podcast will be returning Friday, January 23rd, with our highly anticipated Global Seafood Market Conference recap.
Recorded live from beautiful Hollywood, Florida. Right? It's Hollywood, Florida?
Yeah, sure is.
Yeah, I'm ready to warm up. All right. We'll see you next week for our final farewell to 2025.
Bye-bye.